I am conscious of the privilege of being asked to speak on behalf of the clergy in expressing deep gratitude for the ministry of Archbishop Rowan. I also want to acknowledge my own personal debt to the Archbishop, who was my spiritual director in the early years of my own ministry, helped me to discover more deeply the meaning of my own journey and vocation in God's service. At a recent mealtime at an Archbishop's Council residential, I was reminiscing with Archbishop Rowan about the first time we met. The Archbishop came to lead a weekend on spirituality on the theological training course on which I was a student, or it must be 30 years ago now. "Oh yes," said the Archbishop, "you spent a long time arguing with me at the bottom of the stairs." Funnily enough, I'd blanked that bit out of my memory. At this point, I would also like to record my own personal admiration for Jane, who has made such an outstanding contribution to the church. I speak for the clergy, and we know how much we have gained from her as a teacher and theologian. As have the laity, she has taught and encouraged. So much of her contribution has been made not actually as the wife of the Archbishop, but in her own right. And I am entirely confident that this work will continue and flourish. However, I also know, as Archbishop Sentimu has said, how much she has meant to the spouses of Anglican bishops around the world, and how her love and concern has encouraged them in all they do. In this role, I'm also equally confident she will be much missed. We can't pretend that yesterday did not happen. And I am acutely aware that for the vast majority of the people in the Church of England, this is the last thing in the world they would have wanted, would be for this farewell to be taking place in this context. But we are where we are. And I am determined that nothing will, in fact, I'm even more determined than I would have been, that nothing will hinder the tribute we pay to all that Archbishop Rowan has brought to the Church of England in his time as our Archbishop of Canterbury. Coming from Southwark, in whose cathedral Lancelot Andrews lies buried, perhaps I should first honour the outstanding contribution the Archbishop has made as a scholar Archbishop. Scholarship is one of the many treasures of the Church of England. In 1624, Joseph Hall called the learning of her clergy Stupor Mundi, the wonder of the world. Yet the clergy he named were both scholar and servant, men whose learning led them in the service of the Church. Anglican scholars have long known that scholarship is more than an end in itself, though it is that also. When scholarship has done its work for us then, in Austin Farrer's words, there is still something to be done, and that is the most important thing of all, to use our spiritual ears. This is the tradition of learning in which we have been led, a tradition of thoughtful holiness, of spiritual scholarship. The Archbishop's many books, articles, sermons, and speeches have brought us holy learning and wisdom, by which we will be nourished, not only for years, but generations to come. More than this, the Archbishop has set us an example which I think comes out most clearly in his study of Arius. There he offered us, and I quote, "a detailed reworking and reimagining of the Church's formative conflicts, alerting us to the continuing conversations which form, shape, and make orthodoxy." In the preface to the first edition of Arius, the Archbishop wrote of his hope that the book's readers, and I quote, "will include those concerned for the Church's health and honesty." Archbishop Rowan himself embodies such a concern. He has resisted the temptation of answers and endings, insisting on questions and explorations, despite the personal cost of this. He has insisted, scholar-like, that we attend to what is the case, even if we wish it were otherwise. Scholarship is part of what he has brought to teach us, to try to teach us to do this, but not scholarship alone. Scholar archbishops are well and good, but he has been more to us than that, in the way that he has led us in the prayer of the church. He has reminded us, most recently yesterday, and indeed recently in Rome, reminded the wider Catholic Church that the prayer of contemplation is at the heart of things. Seeing what is so, seeing people as they are and not as we would have them be, regarding God other than as the means to gratify our desires. Archbishop, if we can learn this from you, in your time as Archbishop of Canterbury, then you will indeed have helped the Church to see what it really is and should be, a community in which we can learn to see as God sees, and so to see God. Scholarship and contemplative prayer both demand integrity and authenticity. It is these qualities, I think, that children and young people recognize in their encounters with Archbishop Rowan. Children and young people can spot something phony or patronizing a mile off, and Archbishop Rowan is never, ever either of those. One of my treasured memories is of the morning the Archbishop came to Southwark Cathedral to celebrate the tercentenary of the cathedral school. The service sheet, we were looking at it in the sacristy, had images of two children on the cover as they would have looked 300 years earlier. And when Archbishop Rowan looked at it, he was struck by how isolated and lonely the children on the cover looked. In his address, he wanted to help us make the connection between language, communication, and belonging. And he told the children the story of the little boy who was brought up by wolves. He asked them what language they thought the little boy would speak when he came back into human society. A 5-year-old boy shot his hand up. Welsh was the confident answer. The famous eyebrows and the twinkle in his eyes said it all. As well as integrity and authenticity, good scholarship requires love. Love of the subject which submits to the subject. True prayer is the prayer of love, from one who loves or yearns and loves to love God and submits to God. Archbishoping requires a harder love, love of the Church of England. In all its scholarly glory, sometimes prayer for peace and family fractiousness. The Church of England, despite the sign up there, is greater than the General Synod. And the Church of England doesn't belong to the General Synod. The Church of England belongs to the people of this country, to everyone. And in 2009, Christina Patterson, who is in fact an atheist and humanist and to whom the Church of England belongs, tried to explain why she loved the Church of England, and she wrote this: "I love it because it is patient. It does not expect the world to change in an instant or to be bludgeoned into belief, because it knows that certain things take centuries. I love it because it is kind. It is kind enough to welcome strangers. I like the fact it is mature enough to recognize doubt. I like the fact that it's calm. I like the fact that it recognizes that the religious impulse is here to stay, and that the more you try to crush it, the stronger it will be, and that all human beings, irrespective of their beliefs, have yearnings for the transcendent." Significantly, this recognition of the treasure we have in the Church of England was at the heart of a speech made by Her Majesty the Queen at Lambeth in February this year, when she came to celebrate her Diamond Jubilee at an interfaith event. Her Majesty said this: "We should remind ourselves of the significant position of the Church of England in our nation's life. The concept of our established church is occasionally misunderstood and I believe commonly underappreciated. Its role is not to defend Anglicanism to the exclusion of other religions. Instead, the church has a duty to protect the free practice of all faiths in this country. It certainly does provide an identity and spiritual dimension for its own many adherents, but also, gently and assuredly, the Church of England has created an environment for other faith communities, and indeed people of no faith, to live freely." Archbishop, Her Majesty described the Church of England of your archiepiscopate. You have been a very Anglican Archbishop, welcoming the other, reminding us that we exist for the other, giving us learning, showing us prayer. You have been a very Corinthian Archbishop, for from you we, who are as argumentative and as foolish a church as that of Corinth, from you we have had faith and hope and love. It's not easy to say farewell, but I take inspiration from one of the finest sermons I have heard preached, the sermon you gave on the occasion of Her Majesty's Diamond Jubilee at St. Paul's Cathedral this year. You spoke movingly of service, dedication, and sacrifice. And it was clear to all who know you that you spoke from your heart, from your own experience of both the joy and cost of seeking to serve others in the name of Christ. We give you thanks from the bottom of our hearts for your love, dedication, and service as our Archbishop. And we pray that you and Jane will be richly blessed in all that will emerge in the next phase of your lives.